dazed, sick. She could not tear her eyes from the horror, and cared not at all for what might be landing beside her. A voice shattered her trance.
Jaina.
It was a weary voice that held pain and concern and warmth, and she heard his boots crunching in the sand as he ran up to her. She turned toward Kallak. Through tears standing in her eyes, she saw him clasping a hand to his side, though there was no blood. He was pale and looked exhausted, but still found the strength to hurry toward her, limping slightly. As he drew closer, she saw his reaction to her changed appearance. He reached for her, just as her legs gave way, catching her and cradling her as she collapsed. Of their own accord, her hands sought him, clutching him tightly as she buried her face in the crook of his neck. He held her just as fiercely, one hand on the back of her head and his cheek resting on her now white hair. For a long, wordless moment, they clung to each other, and Jaina received the silent comfort.
"Gone,"
she murmured, her voice raspy with pain and shock.
"All gone. Everyone. Everything. We fought so hard, so courageously, and we'd won, Kallak. We'd won."
He held her even more tightly. He did not attempt to soothe her with words. There were no words of comfort to offer, and she was glad he knew it.
"My kingdom. All the generals, Stoutblow, Tiris Allen, Aubrey, Ronan. Oh, sweet light, Ronan. Why did he do it, Kallak? Why did he save me? I'm the one who is responsible for this."
Now Kallak did speak, drawing back to gaze at her intently.
"No,"
he said, his voice sharp with determination.
"No, Jaina, this is not your fault. Don't you dare blame yourself. If it's anyone's fault, it's mine. My flights, for allowing that cursed focusing iris to be stolen in the first place. That blast, you couldn't have fought it. No one could. The mana bomb was powered by the focusing iris. I was farther away than most, and the force of it hurled me clear out to sea. There was nothing you could have done, nothing anyone could have done."
One strong hand was wrapped around hers as they stood together. She clung to it as if it were a lifeline. And perhaps it was. Even so, she realized what she had to do.
"I have to go back," she said thickly. "Someone might still be alive. I might be able to do something."
His blue eyes widened.
"Jaina, no, please. It isn't safe."
"Safe?"
The word exploded from her, and she jerked in his arms, pulling back.
"Safe? How can you talk to me of being safe, Kallak? That is, was my kingdom. They were my people. I owe it to them to see if there is anything I can do."
"Jaina," Kallak said, stepping toward her imploringly. "That place is reeking with arcane energy. You managed to escape, but the blast is already..."
"Yes,"
she snapped, the pain inside her heart far worse than the pain of her body.
"What has it already done to me, Kallak?"
He hesitated, then spoke very calmly.
"Your hair has been turned white. There is a single blonde streak remaining. Your eyes are glowing white as well."
Jaina stared at him, sickened. If the blast had done so much that was already so obvious, what else might it have done to her that couldn't be seen? Her hand went to her heart for a moment, pressing hard, as if she could somehow push the ravaging ache away. Kallak continued.
"I know you want to do something, to take some kind of action. But there are other things we can do. There's no one left there, Jaina. All you'll be doing is risking further harm to yourself. We can go back later, together, when it's safer and..."
"There's no we, Kallak," she said bitterly.
The hurt that appeared on his beautiful face only made her heart ache more, but she welcomed the pain now, It was suffering, and only her own suffering could ease the agony of the fact that she alone, of all the souls who had been in Theramore to help her, had survived. It felt good, cleansing, in a hard and brutal way.
There's only me and my decisions, and my responsibility for those corpses back there. I'm going to see if there's anything at all I can do, any single life I might be able to save. And I'm going to do it alone, as I've always done. Don't follow me.
Swiftly, she cast a teleportation spell. She heard him crying her name behind her and refused to shed the tears. They hurt her more when she kept them inside. Jaina had thought she was prepared for what she would see. She had been wrong. Nothing could prepare a sane mind for what the mana bomb had done to Theramore. The first thing she noticed was the tower, or rather, where it had once been. Gone was the beautiful white stone building that had housed her extensive library and her cozy parlor. In its place was a smoking crater, horrifically reminiscent of the one that yet lingered in Hillsbrad foothills. Except that gash in the earth had been made by a city departing for war, while this one had been made by Ronan's desperate attempt to avert disaster, an attempt that had been bought with his life. She was surrounded by death, engulfed by it, overwhelmed by it. Death was in a line of listing buildings, not a single one of them intact. Death was in the feel of the earth beneath her feet, in the cacophonous and erratic sky above her. And, most of all, death was in the bodies that lay where they had fallen. Healers sprawled, the injured still in their arms. Riders and horses remained units in death, as in life. Soldiers had fallen with their weapons still sheathed, so sudden and inevitable had been the attack. The air crackled and sizzled and hummed around her, making her white hair float, as Jaina, moving like a somnambulist, stepped carefully around the ruination of her life. Jaina observed, with a strange detachment, the odd things that the mana bomb had strewn about. Over here was a hairbrush, over there a severed hand. Near the edge of the crater fluttered leaves from a book. Automatically, she reached to pick them up. One of them had been altered at so fundamental a level by the bomb that it crumbled to pieces as she touched it. By the armory, a soldier lay in a puddle of red blood. 3 paces away, another soldier floated at Jaina's eye level, globules of frozen purple liquid drifting upward from a rent in his armor. Her foot stepped on something soft, and she jumped back quickly, peering down. It was a rat, its body glowing violet. A piece of perfectly normal cheese was still gripped in its mouth. Kallik's warning that no one could have survived the blast echoed in her mind. Not even the rats, it would seem. She shook her head. No. No. Someone must have survived this. It couldn't possibly have killed everyone, everything. She moved with grim determination, sorting through rubble where she could, pausing to listen, hoping to hear a voice crying for help over the buzzing and crackling of a broken sky. She found Pained, who had fallen over the body of an orc she had clearly slain. Jaina knelt beside the warrior, brushing the long, dark blue hair back, and then gasped as the strands shattered like spun glass. Pain had died with her sword in her hand, the familiar grim expression on her face. She had died as she had lived, defending Jaina and Theramore. The hurt, numbed by horror, moved again, like the awakening of a limb gone to sleep. Jaina forced it down and kept moving. Here were dear Aubrey, and Marcus Jonathan, Tiris Allen, and the 2 dwarves. On the top of one of the broken roofs was sprawled the body of Lieutenant Aiden, his shining armor turned purple-black from the blast. Suddenly, Jaina's mind was clear and rational, and her own.
You should stop. Kallik was right. Get out, Jaina. You've seen enough to know no one survived. Get out now, before you see too much.
But she couldn't. She had found Paind. She needed to find the others.
Tervosh, who had been her friend for so long, where was he? And the guard, Byron, and Alan Bright, the priest, and Janine, the innkeeper, who had insisted on staying. Where were they? Where was...
The shape looked like a child at first, which was what drew Jaina's eye. The children had all been evacuated safely. Who? And then she knew. Jaina stood, barely breathing, wanting to look away but unable to. Slowly, jerkily, her feet moved, almost of their own accord, taking her to the body. Kindi lay face down in a still puddle of her own blood. The crimson stain had tainted her pink hair, matting it, and Jaina realized she wanted to plop Kindi into a hot bath and help her scrub herself clean, get her a fresh new robe. She fell to her knees and placed a hand on the girl's shoulder to turn her over. Kindi's body crumbled into shining violet dust. Jaina screamed. She screamed in utter horror, frantically gathering up the crystalline powder that was all that remained of a smart, lively young woman. She screamed in loss, in grief, in guilt, and then, most of all, in rage. Rage at the Horde. Rage at Garrosh Hellscream. Rage at those who followed him. Rage at Bane Bloodhoof, who had warned her, but had nonetheless permitted this to happen. Had perhaps known this was going to happen. Her screaming turned to racking, hoarse sobs that ripped her throat. She kept lifting handfuls of the purple sand, trying to hold on to Kindi, her sobbing increasing as the dust persisted in trickling through her fingers. This wasn't war. This wasn't even murder. This was obliteration, done at a comfortable distance. Killing in the most brutal and cowardly fashion Jaina could conceive of. Something glinted, like a sort of signal on the dead earth. She stared at it for a moment, then slowly, unsteadily, got to her feet. Staggering like a drunk, she made her way toward the strange gleam. The shard of silvery glass was no larger than her palm. She picked it up. In her shocked state, Jaina didn't realize at once what she was looking at, and then pain stabbed her afresh. So many memories. Anduin's lively face as he chatted with her. Varian's scarred visage. Kallik, standing out of sight in the corner when she used this mirror. Ronan. She caught movement out of the corner of her eye and whirled to look, hoping against all rationality that maybe someone had survived. They were large and covered in armor and green. There were at least 25, perhaps more than 30 of them, all orcs, and they were busily poking around the debris. One of them dropped something in a pouch, spoke to the others, and harsh orcish laughter punctuated the ceaseless ripping and popping sounds. Jaina clenched her fists, including the one that clutched the shard of broken glass. She was only vaguely aware of the pain as the shards sliced open fingers and palm. It took a minute, but one of them noticed her standing in the midst of the devastation. He pulled back, thick green lips from yellowed tusks, in a grin, and nudged one of his comrades. The biggest one in the best armor, clearly the leader of the little scouting party, the coward Garrosh, had no doubt sent to make sure everyone was quite dead, grunted, then said something in thickly accented common.
"Little lady, don't know how you survive, but we correct mistake."
They all drew their weapons. Axes, broadswords, knives that glinted dully with a slick of poison on their blades. Jaina felt her own lips stretch in a rictus of a grin. They looked at her more closely, at first clearly puzzled by her unexpected reaction, and then their leader began to laugh.
"We get to kill Jaina Proudmoore," he said. "Bring her head back to War Chief Garrosh," asked another orc.
"Garrosh." Jaina didn't even deign to reply. She tossed away the mirror shard and simply lifted her hands. A wave of arcane energy, augmented by the lingering effects of the mana bomb, struck them all. They stumbled back, shaking and weakened. One of those clutching a dagger dropped the blade from nervous fingers and struggled to maintain her balance. Stronger orcs shook it off and again brandished weapons, hastening to close the distance. A smirk curved across Jaina's face. The orcs froze, literally in their tracks, their lower legs encased in ice. Jaina's fingers danced in the air, weaving a spell, calling fire out of nothing, and hurling an enormous whirling ball of crackling flame right in their midst. Weakened from the blast of arcane energy, six of them succumbed at once, screaming in torment as they were burned alive. 10 more were severely scorched and spasmed in agony. They too would be dead shortly. The spell wore off, and the remaining orcs, somewhat more cautiously this time, continued to approach. A cone of frigid air encircled them. They now moved as if through mud, and Jaina picked 4 more of them off with fireballs. They fell instantly. Another arcane blast, which felt almost effortless to Jaina, slew more. 10 were left. 6 of them were struggling. 4 were largely uninjured. Again, fire sprang from her fingers, and all 10 of them fell to the ground. She sent out another blast of arcane energy. When she finally lowered her hands, sweat plastering strands of white hair to her face, they were all still. All save one. His chest heaved with ragged breaths, and he twitched and shuddered. Jaina bent and picked up the mirror shard. She didn't look at it. Slowly, stiffly, a cold pleasure growing in her, she stepped over and on the bodies until she reached the lone survivor. He was coughing, red-black blood streaming from his tusked mouth. Most of his body was covered in burns. The plate mail melted to his skin. It had to be terribly painful, Jaina mused. Good. She leaned over the orc, bringing her face close enough to his that she could smell his fetid breath as he gasped for air. He looked up at her, tiny eyes wide with fear. Fear of Jaina Proudmoore, the friend to orcs, the diplomat. "Your people are despicable cowards," she hissed. "You are nothing more than rabid dogs, and you should be put down. You spit on mercy? Then you will have none. You want carnage? Garrosh will get more blood than ever he bargained for." Then, with a savage cry, she brought the shard of mirror down into the small space between the orc's gorget and his shoulder armor. Blood spurted up, covering her hand, splashing her face. The dying orc tried to roll away, but she held his head between her hands, forcing him to look at her as life ebbed with each heartbeat. When he at last was still, she rose. She left the shard of glass from the broken mirror embedded in the orc's throat. Jaina continued her grim perusal of what the horde had left of Theramore. The cold rage inside her burned stronger with everything she beheld. The dock was completely gone. Oddly, she felt better here, looking at the wreckage, than she did near the crater where... She blinked. Not wanting to, but feeling compelled, she turned and walked back to where her tower had stood. She felt the tingling that was the hallmark of arcane energy growing stronger. The whole city was bathed in its residue, but she realized she was approaching the source of the disaster. Her heart rate sped up, and she quickened her pace. She closed her eyes, then opened them. She did not want to look into the crater, but she knew she had to. It was so simple and so lovely, a plain, glowing purple orb that pulsated with arcane energy. It looked delicate, but it had survived a blast that had reduced a city to ashes without so much as a scratch on its surface. Calicos had not exaggerated the power of the item, or, she thought with a stab of fresh grief, the violence it could wreak in the wrong hands. She could feel the energy almost washing over her physically from the artifact's proximity. Her hair stood on end, and she felt her eyes strain for a moment, then adjust, and knew that they were glowing even brighter now. Purposefully, she began to climb down into the crater. Ronan's remains were nowhere to be seen. It appeared that he had succeeded in drawing the bomb directly to him. All that remained of Ronan were two children, a grieving widow, if Verisa had been far enough away to have survived the blast, and his memory. Jaina tasted bitterness in her mouth at the thought. He had died, trying to save her. She would not let his death be in vain. She reached the bottom. The focusing iris was at least twice her size, and certainly heavy. She could teleport it with her and hide it for now, but the most pressing thing was how to conceal it from Calicos. The solution struck her almost at once. Calic had come to know her well, had grown to care for her. Jaina bent down and placed her hand on the artifact, feeling a gentle thrum of energy. Coldly, calculatedly, she proceeded to ward it with her deepest sense of self, holding in her mind her greatest strengths and weaknesses. When he sought to find the focusing iris, he would sense only her. She would use Calic's feelings for her to trick him. As the sole remaining survivor and ruler of Theramore, Jaina Proudmoore claimed the focusing iris for her own. The Horde wanted war. They had gone to grotesque lengths to crush their enemy. If war was what they wished, Jaina would give it to them. With pleasure. Chapter 20. It was, finally, beginning to work. There were still tremors from the wounded earth, and sharp, angry lightning. The wind still wept, and the oceans roared about the shaman as they stood, day after day, offering of themselves to heal the very soul of Azeroth. But there was progress. Sometimes, the ocean seemed to becalm itself for a few moments. The rain would stop for longer and longer stretches, showing glimpses of blue sky. The earthquakes once ceased for 3 whole days. The members of the Earthen Ring, Nubundu, Rhaegar, Muln Earthfury, and others, took each little sign to heart. Just as with healing an injured body, it would take time to heal Azeroth. But the elements would, eventually, recover, as long as the care was maintained throughout the lengthy and grueling process. Thrall stood, strongly and securely on the shivering earth, at once rooting himself and drawing its pain from it. He envisioned his spirit, his union with a great spirit of life, soaring boldly upward to touch the very sky. He drew spray-damp air into his lungs, purifying it and breathing it out cleansed. It was hard work, demanding work, and, thus far, ceaseless work. But it was the most profoundly rewarding and, yes, joyous thing he had ever done in his life. Calmed now, Like a frightened child gradually drifting to sleep, the earth's trembling subsided. The winds, angrier, died down more sullenly. But the rain ceased. The shaman opened their eyes, returning to the simple physical reality, and exchanged weary smiles. It was time to rest. Agra's strong brown hand curled around Thrall's, and she looked at him with approval and admiration.
"My Goel has become a rock instead of a whirlwind," she said. "Since your return, we have made great strides."
He squeezed her hand.
"If I am a rock, then you are the sturdy soil it rests upon, my heart."
"I am your mate, and you are mine," she replied. "We will be like the elements, what each other needs when times are trying. Stone, wind, water, or fire." She winked. It had been Agra who had pushed him toward his destiny when he had been ill at ease with the other shaman. There had been nothing of subtlety about her. Thrall had been angry at the time, but had grown to see her wisdom. Since his return, they had been inseparable, working together as if in a dance, delighting in each other's company when at rest. He thought again of his words to Jaina, and sent a silent prayer to whoever might be listening, that she be blessed as he had been. Thrall's good mood faded when they returned to camp and saw a young orc, dressed in light leather armor, waiting at attention. The dust and mud on his clothing proclaimed him a messenger, and the grim look on his face spoke eloquently of the nature of the news he bore. He saluted smartly.
"Goel," he said, bowing low. "I bring news from Orgrimmar, and from elsewhere."
Coldness seized Thrall's heart. What had Garrosh done? Others, too, were approaching, looking mildly interested at the stranger in their midst. Thrall debated reading the news privately, but decided against it. News was news for them all, for he was no longer war chief of the Horde. He waited until the rest of the ring had arrived, then motioned for them to come forward. The unfortunate young orc shifted his weight, clearly expecting the request that Thrall gave him.
"Read your missive to everyone, my young friend," Thrall said quietly.
The messenger took a steadying breath.
"It is with a heavy heart that I inform you of nothing short of disaster to any thought of peace in this troubled continent. Indeed, perhaps in the entirety of Azeroth. Garrosh gathered the Horde armies and marched on Northwatch Hold, razing it utterly. He then waited several days, allowing the Alliance to build up its defenses at Theramore. Against our navy and army, Theramore brought in the 7th Legion's fleet, and several well-known military advisers, among them Marcus Jonathan, Chandris Feathermoon, Varisa Windrunner, and Admiral Aubrey. The Horde fought bravely, but was defeated, seemingly. Goel, Garrosh utilized enslaved molten giants to gain his victory in the raising of Northwatch Hold. And to destroy Theramore, he..."
The courier paused as a series of gasps rippled through the crowd. Former Horde and Alliance members were both gathered here, their loyalties placed aside in the face of the greater need, but still precious. And, as shaman, to hear of the enslavement of elementals, and such elementals, to wage war, was horrifying. The words, "Destroy Theramore," hung in the air.
"Continue," Thrall said grimly. "To destroy Theramore, he stole an artifact from the Blue Dragons, and used it to power the most potent mana bomb ever created. Theramore has fallen utterly in an arcane ruin, and our scouts say that no one inside the city walls survived."
No one survived. Jaina, his friend, the constant voice of peace, was gone. Thrall found he had difficulty breathing, and Agra squeezed his hand. He tightened his own grip until he knew it was painful. Still, Agra held on, loving and supporting him, knowing more than most the stabbing pain that was in his heart. Quiet sobbing could be heard as one of the Draenei turned to her troll friend for comfort. The troll embraced the Draenei gently, but looked furious. Everyone was stunned, even those Thrall knew to be opposed to peace. Such wanton slaughter held no honor for the Horde, and such recklessness would have a dear price to pay. Unbelievably, there was yet more to hear. Unable to speak just yet, Thrall motioned for the courier to continue. The young orc's own voice was heavy with sorrow as he spoke.
Our navy has dispersed to form a ring around Kalimdor and blockade the Alliance. There will be no aid coming to Feathermoon Stronghold, or Teldrassil, or elsewhere, nor will any significant number of their inhabitants escape. Garrosh has openly boasted of conquering the entire continent, and either driving out, or wiping out, all traces of the Alliance. The only light I can offer, my friend, is that not all the members of the Horde throng about Garrosh delightedly. Some of us see the dangerous path he is treading, and fear that the Horde itself will suffer for it. With apprehension for my people, I remain your friend, Eitrig.
Thrall nodded his comprehension of the dire words, but his mind was on other words, spoken not so long ago by a woman now dead.
Nothing is free, Goel. Your knowledge and skills were bought at a cost. Garrosh is stirring up trouble between the Alliance and the Horde, trouble that didn't exist until he started it. You can control the winds as a shaman, but the winds of war are blowing, and if we do not stop Garrosh now, many innocents will pay the price for our hesitation.
And many had. For a long moment, Thrall simply stood, lost in painful, soul-searching thought, while the rest of the ring spoke their concerns. Had she been right? Could this have been avoided if he had let others do the working here? There was a time when that question would have haunted him for days. Now he examined it, as the rational mind must, and dismissed it. Jaina had always maintained that it was as foolish to downplay one's abilities as it was to exaggerate them. Thrall had held the space of Earth for the four aspects during the battle against Deathwing. He was most certainly not solely responsible for the healing that had taken place here, but he knew he had been able to significantly contribute. To, quite literally, change the world by healing it. He was as disturbed by the use of molten giants as the other shaman, and as grieved as any by the honorless attack upon Theramore, the use of stolen magic to enact mass murder from a distance. But he knew that he could not, in fact, none of them could, leave now. Nobundu was saying that very thing as Thrall's heavy heart turned to the conversation.
We are seeing progress. We cannot stop now, none of us.
What might he do next? Asked Rhaegar. To enslave molten giants for his own selfish purposes threatens to undo all that we have worked toward.
We united with the Cenarian Circle and the Aspects to heal Nordrassil,
Moln Earthfury said.
This union was unprecedented and accomplished all we had hoped. With Nordrassil whole again, the world has a chance of healing. If Garrosh will do this, what might he do to our world tree?
Thrall looked over at his friends. Their faces reflected his own indecision. Nobundu and Moln exchanged glances, and then Nobundu approached.
I am angered and saddened by this news, he said. Not just word of the abuse of the elementals, but all of this. It is true that the Earth may rise up in anger at being so mistreated, and even Nordrassil is at risk. But if we halt our work here now, in an effort to rebuke Garrosh, and I am not sure how such efforts would be received, we risk undoing what good we have managed to achieve. Go well. The Horde was once yours. You chose to place Garrosh in charge of it. And all of us know of your friendship with the peace-seeking Lady Jaina Proudmoore. If you feel the need to depart, no one here will question you. I would say the same to anyone else. We are here because we choose to be, because we are called. If you no longer hear that call, you may walk away with our blessings.
Thrall closed his eyes for a long moment. He was grieving, shocked, furious. He wanted nothing more than to don armor, pick up the Doomhammer, and march on Orgrimmar, to punish Grom Hellscream's son for all the foolish, arrogant, devastating things he had done. Garrosh was his mistake, his responsibility, and no one else's. Thrall had tried to instill orcish pride in Garrosh, but instead of taking the best of his father's lessons, the young Hellscream had taken the worst of them. But he could not go, could not satisfy his pain. Not yet. Even if Jaina Proudmoore's ghost were to show up and cry for vengeance right this moment, he would have to tell her no. He lifted sad blue eyes to Nobundu and said,
I grieve. I am angry. But I am still called to be here. Nothing is greater than this duty, right now.
No one spoke, not even Agra. They all knew what the admission had cost him. Rhaegar reached out and clapped Thrall on the shoulder.
We won't let anyone, Horde or Alliance, who fell in this ill-conceived abomination, die in vain. Let us honor them by what we do here. Let's get back to work.
Jaina teleported into Stormwind's Valley of Heroes, directly beneath the statue of General Tyrallion. General Jonathan used to patrol here, but there was no mounted soldier waiting to greet newcomers to the city or attend the king at a moment's notice. Jaina looked up at the scaffolding that supported several towers, still under repair from Deathwing's attack. She'd hidden the focusing iris safely, close enough so that Caligos would still blur the artifact and her together, but other than that, she had not bothered to do much to prepare for her meeting with Varian. Her face and robes were still dirty, her body lacerated by small cuts and discolored by bruises. She did not care. This was no formal dinner, no celebratory gathering, no occasion for baths and cosmetics, or even clean clothes as far as she was concerned. Jaina had come for a more somber and colder reason than that. Her only concession to her appearance was to wear a dark cape with the hood pulled down to hide her newly white hair with a single remaining golden streak. Stormwind, it seemed, had already gotten the dreadful tidings of Theramore's fate. The city was bustling at all hours, but now there was a precision and a grimness to it. Soldiers patrolled the streets, no longer nodding and greeting citizens casually, but striding with purpose, their eyes scanning the rushing crowds. The bright banners of gold and blue had been taken down, replaced by simple, plain black ones of mourning. Jaina pulled her cloak about her more tightly and set out for the keep.
Halt!
The voice was sharp, commanding. Jaina whirled, instinctively lifting her hands to cast a spell, but stopped herself. It was no Horde member assaulting her. It was one of Stormwind's guards. He had drawn his sword and regarded her, frowning. The frown turned into shock as the guard's eyes met hers. Jaina forced a smile.
Your devotion to duty is to be commended, sir, she said. I am Lady Jaina Proudmoore, come to have an audience with your king.
She moved the hood back slightly, enough so that her features could be distinguished. Jaina did not recall meeting this man personally before, but it was likely she had encountered him during her many formal visits. If not, she was a familiar enough figure that he would recognize her. It took a moment, but then he sheathed his sword and bowed.
My apologies, Lady Jaina. We were told there were no survivors save those in the outskirts of the city. Thank the light you are alive.
It has nothing to do with the light, thought Jaina. It has everything to do with Ronan's sacrifice.
She still did not know why Ronan had chosen to die while ensuring that she survived. He was a husband and father of twins, the leader of the Kirin Tor. He had more to live for than she did. Jaina should have died with her city, the city she had been too trusting to truly protect. Nonetheless, the words were meant kindly. "Thank you," she said. The guard continued.
"We are preparing for war, as you see. Everyone, we were all stunned to hear..."
Jaina couldn't bear any more and lifted a hand. "Thank you for your concern," she said. "Varian is expecting me." He wasn't. He thought her dead, lost with Kindi and Pained and Tervosh and... "I know the way."
"I'm certain you do, lady. If you have need of anything, anything at all, any of the Stormwind guards would be honored to assist."
He saluted again and resumed his patrol. Jaina continued on to the keep. Here, too, the banners of the Alliance had been replaced with black ones, hanging on the front of Stormwind Keep, behind the huge statue of King Varian Wrynn. Jaina had seen it before, and gave it, and the fountain upon which it stood, little heed. Quick footfalls carried her up the steps to the main entrance of the keep, where she announced herself, and was told that Varian would, of course, see her shortly. While she waited, Jaina had another visit she needed to pay. She slipped off through a side door and into the royal gallery. It, and the art it housed, had suffered from the attack of the great black dragon. Some of the statues had been shattered, and several works of art shaken from the walls. Anything damaged beyond repair had been removed, but other paintings, carvings, and sculptures remained here, awaiting attention. Jaina stood still, as if she too were carved of stone. So painful were the emotions racing through her that she wished she was. Then her knees buckled, and she found herself sprawled before a huge statue. It depicted a proud man with long hair flowing beneath a sweeping hat. His mustache was neatly trimmed, and his carved gaze was fastened on something in the distance. One hand, now missing two stone fingers, was on the hilt of his sword. The other grasped his belt. A crack ran through the statue, starting at the booted right foot and zigzagging upward to end in the center of his chest. Jaina reached out with a trembling hand and touched the stone boot.
"Was it only 5 years ago that I chose my path?" she whispered. "I chose to ally with strangers, with the enemy, with orcs, instead of you, Papa, instead of my own blood. I called you intolerant, said that peace was the way. You said you would always hate them, that you would never stop fighting them. And I told you they were people. They deserved a chance. And now you are dead. My city is dead."
Tears slipped down her face. In a detached part of her brain, she observed that they were light purple and glowing, liquid arcane energy. As they splashed onto the stone base upon which the statue stood, the tears evaporated in violet mist.
"Papa, forgive me. Forgive me for letting the Horde grow so strong. Forgive me for giving them the chance to slaughter so many of our people."
She lifted her eyes up again, seeing the implacable statue through a haze of purple white.
"You were right, Papa. You were right. I should have listened. Now that it's too late, I see that. It took this for me to understand."
She dragged a sleeve across her streaming eyes.
"But it's not too late for me to avenge you. To avenge Kindi and Pained and Tervosh and Ronan, Aubrey and all the generals. To avenge everyone who fell last night in Theramore. They'll pay. The Horde will pay. I'll destroy Garrosh. You'll see. With my own hands, if I can. I'll destroy him and every one of those cursed green-skinned butchers. I promise you, Papa, I won't betray you again. I won't let them kill any more of our people. Ever. I promise. I promise."
Jaina had taken a few moments to compose herself before returning to await her summons. That newfound composure was shattered when, after being announced and ushered into Varian's private chambers, She was greeted not by the tall, dark-haired former gladiator, but by a slender, tow-headed boy.
"Aunt Jaina,"
said Anduin, relief on his face as he hurried toward her.
"You're alive!"
He hugged her tightly. Jaina was stiff in the embrace. He sensed it at once and pulled back. His eyes went wide as he fully took in her arcane-altered appearance.
"What are you doing here?"
she asked, more sharply than she had intended.
"I was worried about you," he said. "When word reached us about what happened in Theramore, I wanted to be here. I knew that if you had survived, you'd come to Stormwind."
She stared at him, mute. What could she possibly say? How could she speak to this child, who was so naive about the true horror of what she had witnessed? He was so innocent, so ignorant of the real nature of their enemy.
"As naive and ignorant as I was, once."
"Jaina, thank the light."
She turned, relieved, to address the warrior king who strode into the room. Varian had long nursed a personal hatred of the orcs. Anduin was too young to understand, but he would one day. Varian, she knew, would understand now, now, when it counted the most. He was dressed informally and looked exhausted and harried, but there was relief and pleasure on his face. It, too, turned to surprise at her appearance. Irritated, Jaina snapped.
"The only reason I survived was because Archmage Ronan pushed me through a portal to safety. I was affected, at least somewhat, by the blast."
Varian raised an eyebrow at the bluntness of her statement, but he nodded, accepting the explanation and not dwelling on it.
"You'll be glad to know you weren't the only survivor," he said. "Varisa Windrunner and Chandra's Feathermoon and their scouting parties are also alive. They were far enough away from the center of the blast. They've returned to their respective homes and are talking to their people about war."
Jaina didn't want to think about the widowed Varisa and her two fatherless children.
"I'm glad to hear that," she said. "All of it. Oh, Varian, I owe you an apology. You've been right all along. I kept telling you that we could somehow reach the Horde, find some way to peace. But we can't. This proves that we can't, and you knew it, even when I was too blinded by hope to see it. We need to retaliate against the Horde. Now. They'll all go back to Orgrimmar. Garrosh won't be able to resist a celebration of his brave victory over the Alliance."
Anduin flinched slightly at the bitterness in her voice. She pressed on, the words rushing out of her.
"The streets will run with ale, and the whole army will be assembled. There will be no better time to strike."
Varian tried to speak.
"Jaina."
She barreled on, starting to pace and gesturing with her hands.
"We'll get the Kaldori to send their ships along with ours. We'll take them completely by surprise. We'll kill the orcs and raise their city. Make sure that they don't ever recover from this blow. We'll..."
"Jaina."
Varian's deep voice was level as he caught hold of her wrists and gently halted her nearly frantic pacing.
"I need you to be calm right now."
She turned her face up to his, questioning. How could he speak of calmness?
"I'm sure you don't know this, but the Horde has built up a very effective blockade around the entire continent. The Kaldori couldn't come help us, even if they wanted to. I'm not saying we don't strike back. We will, but we've got to do so intelligently. Have a strategy. Figure out first how to break the blockade, and then regain Northwatch."
"Don't you know what they did to it?" Jaina snapped.
"I know," Varian said. "But it's still a strategic foothold that we've got to get back before we can make a move. We've got to rebuild the fleet. We lost a lot of good people at Theramore. It's going to take time to call back others from their posts to fill their positions. We need to do this right, or we're just throwing more lives away."
Jaina was shaking her head.
"No, we've got no time for that."
"We don't have time to not do it," Varian said.
He kept his voice measured and calm. For some reason, it irritated Jaina.
We're looking at war that could stretch out over 2 continents, maybe even into Northrend. If I am to enter into a world war where there are no boundaries, I'm going to do so wisely. If we rush in now, we do the Horde's work for them.
Jaina looked over at Anduin. He stood silently, his face pale and his blue eyes sad. He made no effort to interrupt his father and his friend in their discussion about a worldwide war. She returned her attention to Varian.
I have something that can help, she said. A very great weapon has come into my keeping. It will destroy Orgrimmar, just as surely as the Horde destroyed Theramore. But we will need to act now, when the armies are foolishly gathered together in Orgrimmar. If we don't, the moment will be lost.
Her voice rose on the last word, and she realized she'd clenched her fists. It would be more than just to use the focusing iris on Garrosh and his beloved Orgrimmar.
We can wipe out every one of those green-skinned sons of... Jaina!
The word was a pained, sharp exclamation from Anduin. Surprised, Jaina fell silent.
What happened in Theramore was more than a tragedy, Varian said, turning Jaina gently to regard him. It was an irreparable loss, and a vile and cowardly act. But we mustn't compound the loss by losing more Alliance soldiers needlessly.
There could even be some in the Horde who disagree with what happened, Anduin said. The Tauren, for instance, and even most orcs prize honor.
Jaina shook her head.
No, not anymore. It's too late for that, Anduin. Far too late. There's no going back from what they've done. You didn't see what...
Her voice caught, and she struggled to speak for a moment.
We must retaliate, and we can't wait. Who knows what atrocity Garrosh and the Horde will perpetrate if we do? We can't have another Theramore, Varian. Don't you see?
We will fight them, don't worry, but we'll do so on our terms.
She jerked free from his hands on her arms and stepped back.
I don't know what's happened to you, Varian Wrynn, but you've turned into a coward. And you, Anduin, I am sorry for my part in keeping you a gullible child. There's no hope for peace. There's no time for strategy. I have their ruination in my grasp. You're a fool for not seizing the chance.
They spoke her name at once, father and son, so different but so oddly similar in how they stepped forward imploringly. She turned her back on both of them. Chapter 21. It was with a wounded body and a heavy heart that Caligos returned to Northrend and the Nexus. He had, despite Jaina's words, followed her. Partially because he feared for her safety and her state of mind, and also because he sensed that the focusing iris was still in Theramore. It took him time. He had to fly, bearing not insignificant injuries from the battle, and she had teleported. He had beheld the huge crater and what the mana bomb had left of Theramore. It was sickeningly little. But the focusing iris was nowhere to be found. Someone had to have found it. He suspected Garrosh. The lives of a few loyal subjects of the Horde were nothing compared to the power of the focusing iris. Of course he would send a party to retrieve it. Thus he had left Kalimdor, flying bleakly and laboriously northward, with nothing to show for his efforts on the Blue's behalf other than a dead city that was mute testimony to his failure. He had, unexpectedly but certainly, fallen in love. Now she too had been broken because of what he had done, or failed to do. Part of him simply wanted to head in a random direction and just keep going. But Caligos could not do that. The blue dragons had put their faith in him. He had to tell them what had transpired and determine what course they wished him to take now. Kirigosa met him as he approached from the south. She darted around him for a moment, showing her pleasure at his return, then settled in to fly beside him, the the rest of the way to the Nexus. "You were wounded," she said worriedly. Many scales had been ripped from Caligos's azure form, and the skin beneath bore ugly bruises. He could fly still, but ached with every wing beat.
"It is a little hurt," he said.
"It is not," she replied. "What has happened? We sensed something terrible, and you do not have the focusing iris."
"It is a story I wish to have to tell, but once," he said, his voice revealing the deep pain of his heart. "Will you gather the flight, dearest Curie?"
For answer, she dipped beneath him, nuzzling his head with her own, then flew off to obey. They awaited him, and he saw, with renewed bleakness, that their numbers had dwindled even further since his departure. He was pleased to see that Naragos, Taralagos, Banagos, and Alagosa had remained. He landed among them, retaining his dragon form, and looked about.
"I have returned, but the news I bear is grim."
They stood quietly as he spoke, telling them of the cooperation he'd had from Ronan and the Kirin Tor, from Jaina, of his difficulty in pinning down the location of the focusing iris, and, finally, keeping his voice emotionless because he could not bear to feel it all again, of the Horde using their artifact against the Alliance with so devastating an effect. They listened in silence. No one asked questions. No one interrupted. He had expected anger, but instead they seemed to grow more melancholy than furious at the thought that their magic, their focusing iris, had been used to wreak such malicious destruction. It was as if something had broken inside each of them. Kallik understood that. It was a reflection of his own torment. No one spoke for a long time. Then Taralagos lifted his head and regarded Caligos sadly.
"We have failed," he said. "Our charge has ever been to ensure that magic was used wisely, to manage it, and look how badly we've executed that duty."
"The failure is mine, Taralagos," Kallik said. "I was the aspect. I could sense the focusing iris, but I failed to locate it in time."
"It was stolen from all of us, not only you, Caligos. We all must shoulder the responsibility for this abhorrent event."
"I am your leader, as long as you will have me," Kallik said,
though the words were like ash in his mouth as he spoke them.
"I will do all that is in my power to recover it.
Even though it has gone missing, again, if only I had been able to destroy it when the Sky Galleon still bore it."
"You are as lost as you were before this started," said Alagosa. There was only sorrow in her voice, not censure, but even so, the word stung. She was right.
"It wasn't Theramor," Kallik said. "It was not destroyed in the attack. Someone has spirited it away again, and I am certain that it is the Horde."
"I am not. I believe that it is in the possession of Jaina Proudmoore. You said she reached Theramore before you, and by the time you arrived, the focusing iris was gone." It was not what was said that surprised Kallik, so much as who had said it. The accusation, spoken in gentle tones but no less stunning for that, came from Kirigosa. She had lingered in the back, listening quietly, but now she moved forward.
"Jaina helped me to find it," Kallik retorted defensively. "She knew even before, what kind of havoc it could wreak. Why would she willingly take it without telling me?"
"Perhaps because she doesn't trust you to keep it safe," said Kiri. Again, there was no attack in her voice or mien, but Kallik still felt wounded. "Or perhaps because she plans to use it against the Horde."
"Jaina would never."
"You do not know what she would and would not do," said Kirigosa. "She is human, Kallik, and you are not. Her kingdom has been removed from the map, as surely as if it had been blotted out with ink. She is a powerful mage, and the focusing iris, the very instrument of death to her people, was within her grasp. We need to consider this a possibility, and prepare for it. If she has it, we must find out and take it back, whatever the cost. It is our artifact, and much of that blood is on our heads.